You never know what Jad Abumrad will say. The Radiolab host is known for his quirky storytelling approach to science as he tackles deep, mind-bending material. So he might be thinking big. Or he might just be thinking about the sanitary habits of badgers and his visit to the badger state.
Do you know what I learned about badgers? Speaking of Wisconsin, I learned this morning. They have communal toilets.
They
dig a hole and the entire badger, posse or whatever they're called, goes and just and poops in the hole. And the hole is very far away from their den, whatever it's called. But they all use it. So I've never heard of that with an animal. But I was like, wow, badgers.
Even winners of the MacArthur Genius Award think about badgers once in a while. That was Jad Abumrad, founder and co-host of the hit syndicated public radio program Radiolab.
With the success of Radiolab, it can be surprising to know that Abumrad goes through what he calls gut-churning doubt as part of his creative process. He joins us now to explain how he uses that dark, biting insecurity as fuel for innovation. Jad, welcome to Central Time.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, as the guy who hosts a hit radio show and has a MacArthur Genius Award to his name, I think it might surprise people to know that you have, sometimes in your creative process, a gut-churning insecurity. What did that insecurity feel like when you sat down to create Radiolab?
Back in the Stone Age, when this show began in 2002, it was then a very different kind of show. It was like a three-hour show late on Sunday nights that no one listened to, like literally no one. But I didn't know that, so it felt like the stakes were super high. And I was super green, and I just remember, hours, maybe 2 hours, trying to track simple line like, hey, this is Jad, welcome to Radiolab. I would try that line for like 2 hours to try and make it sound like me. And I would go through all the voices in your head that you have when you're new, trying to expel those voices and get to your voice. That would take me hours and hours and hours, and I would feel like a fraud and all those what I now feel are normal feelings when people are trying to make stuff. That was the feeling at the beginning. And it's funny, like the middle and now the late middle, whatever period we're in now, is still punctuated by moments that feel that way. And so, the gut churn as this thing I'm talking about is, I feel like it's partly an attempt to sort of reclaim that feeling and be like, you know what, I think this is a useful feeling. I feel like this is the energy that makes creativity go. And so, it's all throughout the process us, not just me, but for all of us.
Do you think people are upfront about that, that it is kind of this wrenching time of self-doubt and trial by error? Or do you think there's pressure out there to act like, it comes out of the box perfect and ready to wear?
Well, I can't really say, but I do know that it's something that I hadn't seen anyone talk about. There's all this sort of stuff that's sort of like almost like Silicon Valley inspired about disruption and about failure and about innovation and about this and that. But I hadn't actually seen anyone talk about what it actually feels like when you're in the middle of those things. And when you're trying to do something new and you don't have a template for it and you're scared. You're not quite sure why you're so scared, but somehow you feel like you might die and you're just doing a radio show and you're asking yourself, why do I feel this way? I haven't actually heard anyone talk about that experience. And so I just started thinking about it and I started doing a bunch of interviews with like poker players and like Cherokee shaman and weird people like that who all have interesting things to say about the utility, it turns out, of those feelings. And I just thought, this is kind of interesting. It's changing the way I work. It's making me think differently about how to manage a group through a process of uncertainty. And it might just be worth speaking about out loud. So that's kind of why I'm coming, is because of that.
Well, for those of us who can't actually make it to your talk, which is coming up, what did the Cherokee shaman say about why that's a useful feeling?
Oh, gosh. It's one of my favorite things ever. Let's see. To set it up, they... there's like a really interesting difference to consider. Like when you're in the process of creating something, there's a difference between the kind of fear that is useful and catalytic and it'll ultimately push you towards something great, and then the kind of fear that's paralyzing. And that's always an interesting question that you have to ask yourself. And the Cherokee have this idea that any fear that is not your fear, but it's been given to you, maybe by a boss or someone or like from social media, whatever it is, any fear that's been handed to you from the outside, that isn't your own, the only logical response, they would say, to that fear is to kill it. You can't negotiate with it. You can't listen to it. You just got to kill it. And so they do this thing. They train as adolescents. They train in this thing called hunting the dark spirit, which basically it's a process they learn of lucid dreaming where they fall asleep, wake up in their dream, identify what they call the dark spirit or the dark creature, which is that fear embodied somehow in their dreams. And they literally hunt it. They'll like hunt it with a spear and kill it. And that's their way of trying to identify the externalized fear and actually eliminate it, exterminate it. And I like that idea because I like the thought that there are some things that don't have utility beyond just you just have to make them go away. And that was part of the, you know, things I was thinking about. And when I learned about the Cherokee and thought back to some of my own creative experiences, it was really useful. And I was like, God, I wish I had known about the Cherokee before this. It could have saved me so much trauma. But yeah.
Do you think you did kill off your fear in the process of creating Radiolab?
I don't know. I mean, it's sort of like every story has a little bit of that toxic doubt in it, and you have to kind of kill it as it comes up. And so it's a constant process, I find. You know, there are stories you do, and they're like great stories, and they come out easy. And then they're the other kind where you're trying something new, and it doesn't feel comfortable, and you're taking a risk which could easily just blow up, and you feel stupid. And nowadays, when people are listening, that's a different prospect than back when people weren't listening. And so in those moments, you get really scared. And then it's always interesting to me. I think, okay, what would a Cherokee shaman say right now? I think, what would they say about this feeling I'm having? Is this a feeling I should listen to or not? And so I sort of think about them. I think about the Cherokee way of being in those moments to try and figure out what are the good fears and what aren't.
Now, you were talking about how that feeling of being completely confused and lost in the woods as being something that's vital, a big part of that creative process. And most of us spend our lives trying not to feel that way. I mean, it's not a comfortable way to feel. Why do you think it's actually a good place to seek out when you're trying to create something new?
Well, it's like that time-lapse photograph of the that we've all seen of like the seed bursting out of the pod and through the soil. I mean, it's messy. It's probably painful for that little seed, and we've created all this language around these feelings of like this. That we've all this like about pain and about avoidance, but like, guess what? There's no life without that feeling. The seed couldn't actually get out into the air without that traumatic point. And so, I don't know. I just find like it's nothing more than fundamental. It just is. And the moment you start to think of it that way, I found for me, it's just really helpful to know that this is just part of the process. It's part of the path. And so when you begin to really take that in, it becomes like, oh, I'm feeling this way. Hello, old friend. And you begin to see these feelings as just part of the, not something to avoid, but something that actually lets you know you're doing the real work. You know, that maybe something will happen that's good.
Once you've got something that becomes something, you know, you're not working on this newborn radio show, Radiolab, anymore. You're working on the hit, widely listened to, widely respected show, Radiolab, and it's, you know, it's become a thing. Once you've hit that point, are you still trying to bust through to birth new things, or do you feel a pressure to maintain this Radiolab brand that people know and love?
Both. It is a thing now, and like there's a lot of things that depend on that thing. Like there are people that work for the thing, and there are people who create underwriting messages for the thing, and there are membership messages that go out on the thing, and there are newsletters that the station sends out about the thing. So it's suddenly really hard in the middle of all those dependencies to be like, you know what, this thing should be a different thing. Instead of a circle, let's make it a square. Like, it's really hard to suddenly make those kinds of moves when the thing is at this stage of thingness. So, but what I think of it this way, it's like I think of it weirdly probabilistically at this point. Like, if we're going to do five expressions, like five stories, I'll give myself three that can be like the last time we did it. So there are three stories that I'm not going to say they're going to be easy, but they're going to fall into familiar forms. But those other two damn well better make me sweat. Damn well better make me hurt a little bit. And like that's the balance. Like you get three hall passes and then you get two that's got to be a little bit painful. Not too much painful because then that would be irresponsible, but like a little painful. And so you internalize that sense of balance. And so, I mean, I see the group doing that now where like we'll have an editorial meeting and we'll all just sort of collectively be like, you know, we really need to take – we need to do something that's kind of stupid and kind of crazy. And then that leads you like for us to do these experiments. Like we just did a whole hour on like the legal foundation for the war on terror, which was like a whole wonky legalistic counterterrorism deep dive, which is not what we've ever done. And it gave four of the staff the flu, you know, because we crashed and burned on it so hard. But like it felt like that's what we needed to do at that point because we had done a couple of stories which felt – again, not easy, but sort of familiar. And so I feel like it's a budget. Like you got five things, spend three on what you know and two on what you know you don't know. And like that's the balance. And that's the only responsible way to do it when this thing is already a thing. I mean, when you're brand new in the world, you can experiment all you want to. But we kind of have to take a certain number, but not too many experiments at the moment.
Well, how do you know which one of those is the right one? Does it feel just right in your gut, or is there something else?
I'm not sure you ever know. I feel like it's, again, playing the odds. Like if you're going to tell five stories, you got to chase 20, knowing that 10 of them are going to die, and you're left with five that you might put on the shelf, and then five that ultimately make it to air. And the five that make it to air, by virtue of the fact that you've chased so many, they're going to be the ones that you never expected to work out, you know? So I feel like that's the key. There's some kind of weird, like, probabilistic math. And that if you just place a lot of bets and you're comfortable with the fact that most are going to fail, well, then a couple will sprout. And it'll never be the ones you expect.
I wish we could keep talking, but we're out of time. Jed, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Jad Abumrad, host of the popular public radio show and podcast Radiolab. You can catch him at 7:30 tonight at the UW-Madison's Memorial Union. Well, he'll present a public lecture called Gut Churn. For more information, check out our Central Time Facebook page.